You're listening to Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Veronica Rickert. This weekend is the fourth Tales from Planet Earth Film Festival. It's an every other year celebration of environmental filmmaking, usually around a central theme. It's put on by the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at the UW-Madison. This year's theme is Futures. Here to fill us in on what to expect this year is Peter Boger, the Tales from the Planet Earth a festival programmer, and we've got a filmmaker here too, Peter Gallison, co-director of Containment, one of the films that will be featured in this year's festival. Peter Boger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Peter Gallison, thanks to you as well.
Pleasure to be here.
Peter Boger, first, tell us, what is the Tales from Planet Earth Film Festival? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, the goal of Tales from Planet Earth, there are a lot of environmental film festivals out there, but we really wanted to try to expand people's understanding and ideas about what an environmental film is. People tend to think of Planet Earth and those kind of Discovery Channel films, or else they tend to think of diatribe films that tell you that we're all going to die and it's all of our faults. And we really wanted it to be more, no, the environment is where we live, work, and play. And so an environmental film is any film that really explores how people and place relate to each other. And so every festival, that's what we try to accomplish.
Right. I think there might be a note of panic in someone about to sit down and think, am I about to watch a PowerPoint presentation for an hour and a half on a big screen? There's more creativity going on than
Absolutely.
That.
We want to expand genres. We want people to realize that comedies, that science fiction, that animated films, all of that can be an environmental film as long as you're really exploring how people and place shape each other.
And it's not just, as you said, documentaries.
No, we have lots of fiction films. We have three new science fiction films, anime films. We do have some documentaries going all the way back to 1929. But we also have midnight showings of the original Planet of the Apes or the Mad Max films with Mel Gibson.
Hopefully not visions of things to come in either of those two movies, I hope. So this year's theme, Futures.
Futures. So this really came out of an understanding that we're at this moment now where time is so important to thinking about environmental questions, that we're in an era where everything is moving more rapidly, where there's not a 24-hour news cycle, there's a one-minute news cycle with Twitter and with Facebook. And when you have political discussions and economic discussions working on those timescales, and yet you have environmental crises that develop over decades and over centuries, the two don't match up. And so thinking about futures, it's thinking about time and thinking about how do we tell new stories and how do we think differently about time if we're going to solve these environmental problems that will take generations to solve.
Well, it's a good time to bring you in, Peter Gallison, because your work deals with the time frame of very long half-lives. Your documentary is Containment. Tell us about it.
Well, with my colleague Rob Moss, we've made a film that goes back and forth between the present, where we are trying to dispose of vast amounts of nuclear waste that are the legacy of more than half a century of nuclear weapons production and nuclear power. And looking forward, we have to figure out a way to contain these wastes, to seal them off from the world into which we have contact. So this means you have to ask questions that are both necessary and almost impossible. We have things like plutonium, which have a half-life of 24,000 years. And so right away, you can see that you have to keep these sealed off from us humans for a time much longer than human history. And that back and forth between imagining an unimaginably far future and the current realities of figuring out what we're going to do with this stuff, which we have to do, is the subject of our film.
Let's bounce back and forth between those timescales for a bit. Right, you spend a lot of time on this in New Mexico. Am I right?
That's right. In New Mexico, the only licensed operating nuclear disposal facility exists, an underground facility in a huge salt bed that was laid down several hundred million years ago, is being used to receive the waste that was produced in the course of making about 70,000 nuclear weapons over the course from the time of Hiroshima and Nagasaki to the present. And so we've been filming down there. It's quite an amazing environment. It's about a half a mile underground. And people are emplacing canisters of waste in there, hoping, the idea is that over the course of time, the salt actually compresses. It flows like a slow-moving paste. And under the pressure of being that far underground, it will. The idea is that it will seal up those wastes and keep them from access to the environment.
Now, this is not a highly populated area, but it is not a completely depopulated area. What What is it like living in the world's only registered nuclear containment area?
Well, for the people that live right near there, the WIP site, the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, is actually a source of great pride and jobs. There are about 1,000 jobs that each pay about $100,000 with benefits. So this is in a not rich part of the country where this has become a major source of employment, and technically it's worked out pretty well. It's not collapsing. They haven't had big failures or problems with it. So people there are quite proud of it. In the nearby town of Carlsbad and the surrounding towns near there, you may have heard of Carlsbad Caverns, but this is not far from there. It's in the southeastern part of New Mexico. Now, in the north of New Mexico, people have been quite opposed to this site. So even within a single state, it's been a contentious issue. But locally, the WIP site has the support and participation of the community now.
Now let's look toward the future time frame you mentioned. In addition to wanting to safely physically contain this stuff, is there a question of how, in case people stumble onto this in the future, archaeologists, miners, how do we convey to people who might not speak English or any current language on the earth, maybe, this is bad stuff, stay out?
Well, that's the problem. And when Congress approved the idea of making the waste repository in New Mexico, they put a constraint on it. They said, you have to be able to mark for 10,000 years. Now, 10,000 years is not even half of one half-life of plutonium. So the question was, why choose that? Well, they thought, if you could convey things to 10,000 years in the future, then like a relay race, they'd carry it on forward. But in order to figure out how to mark the site, how to build the kind of monuments that would be interpretable to the very far distant future, they had to imagine what kind of inadvertent intrusion might take place. Who might actually dig in there? Well, people might be digging for oil, or they might be digging for water, or for something we don't even know. So how do you communicate to them? So they called in the futurists. This was a profession that was established really at the beginning inside World War II, when the sudden creation of these new technologies of jets and cruise missiles and intercontinental missiles, I mean, large-scale ballistic missiles, became a reality. Suddenly the Air Force and in the years after World War II began to try to imagine what the future would be. And then big companies did too, oil companies and others. So they engaged a new group of people, engineers and other people from other specialties, to try to imagine what they called scenarios, which they referred to almost like little movie scripts, perfectly enough for making a film about it. And they would be stories, little stories that would capture almost like a war game, little stories that would focus our attention on the kinds of motivations that might lead people to penetrate the site. So when they did that, they began to imagine 100 years in the future, 1,000 years in the future, 5,000 years in the future, 10,000 years in the future. This for an interdisciplinary group that had never imagined farther than 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 years in the future at the outside limit. So it became what I think of as a kind of state science fiction. In fact, there was a science fiction writer who was part of the group, who's also a very good astrophysicist.
All right. Well, Peter Gallison, I'll ask you some more about storytelling and how you tell your story. But Peter Boger, I want to ask you, this is Containment. We've just been talking about that, one of the documentaries at this film festival. Tell us about one or two of the other documentaries that are part of this year's event.
So we have documentaries in several different what we call strands of films. And one of our biggest strands of films, which Containment sits in, is what we call What's Ahead. So it's about the future of energy, considering different energy sources like nuclear power, also considering the future of the electrical grid. So on Sunday, for example, we're showing two films with filmmakers who are here in Madison, one from India, one from the United Kingdom, who are making films about the lack of access to electricity and the fact that 1.5 billion people around the planet lack regular access to electricity. So one of those films is called Blackout, and it's set in Guinea in West Africa, where only 20% of the country has access to electricity. And Eva Weber, the director who will be there, was there and noticed that there were kids walking down the streets at night and wondered, who are these kids? What are they doing? It turns out they're going to study, and they're going to study at the local gas station because that's the only place that has artificial light. So along with that, there's a film called Powerless by Deepti Kakkar, who will be here, and that's set in India and looking at the same issue of there being a lack of regular electricity for 400 million people in India.
Now, when somebody first described the film festival, the word dystopia was mentioned. Are there dystopian visions in some of the documentaries or fiction films?
Well, actually, we have, each time we've done the festival, we've been fortunate enough to have an interdisciplinary arts institute artist in residence. And this year we have filmmaker Alex Rivera in residence, who made the 2009 Sundance Award-winning film Sleep Dealer. And he's teaching a course here at UW this semester for UW undergrads and graduate students called From Eco-Utopia to Eco-Apocalypse. And each of the students in the class has made a 3-minute short film, and those will be shown in front of every film in the festival.
That's Peter Boger. He's programmer for the Tales from Planet Earth Film Festival. The Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at UW-Madison is behind that. We also have Peter Gallison with us, co-director of a documentary showing at the festival. It's called Containment. This year's theme is futures. We're finding out what to expect, and we'll hear more about how to tell environmental stories on film, whether documentary or fictional format. We'll continue our discussion after this break. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. Thanks, Kristen. You're listening to Central Time. We're talking with Peter Boger. He's programmer for the Tales from Planet Earth Film Festival. It's this weekend at UW-Madison. Also with us, Peter Gallison, co-director of Containment, a documentary that will be featured in this year's festival. Well, let's talk a little bit about environmental storytelling. Peter Gallison first. I had mentioned and joked a little bit earlier, like people might expect a big a PowerPoint presentation writ large. How do you tell an environmental story in a way that makes it as compelling as any other story?
Well, we have a couple of different kinds of stories in this film. They're the sites that really concern nuclear waste. One of them is Fukushima, which has become an enormous waste site now, with cesium-137 strewn over a very wide area, pumped into the sea, in the soil itself. People are trying to figure out how to handle that. Then there's the Savannah River site, a place where we're telling the story of a site where a good amount of the material used in making nuclear weapons during the Cold War left a very large area contaminated, and now it's a huge cleanup site that's going to cost many tens of billions of dollars to sort out. And then there's this New Mexican mine, a salt mine, about a half mile underground, where the waste is being emplaced that comes from the nuclear weapons cleanup effort. So part of the storytelling is about these sites and about also the people that live near them and how they see the world, what it's like to be a person who, say, had to move from near the plant at Fukushima and was trying to come back to their home, or what it's like to be a cattle farmer who's refused to leave in Fukushima and what choices that left him. So there are individual stories in the here and now, as well as the stories of those sites. And finally, there are these stories, these little scenarios, trying to project the future, trying to imagine what might lead people 1,000 or 10,000 years from now to dig into these sites. And those little scripts form the basis for a series of animated explorations that we do of the far distant future.
Wow, you're covering a lot of ground.
Well, what we hope is that this diversity of imagery and the tone, that this fantastically far future and what we might imagine from it, beating against the very material, very real circumstance of people now, actually creates something of an awareness about time of our human present lives, but with dealing with a material and a problem that really engages us with responsibilities towards 400 or 4,000 generations in the future.
And then, Peter Boger, looking at the films on this year's program, environmental films, a lot of them will have a message, I'm assuming. How do the filmmakers in the festival this year weigh, you know, telling their message versus maybe losing the story, losing the narrative? How do they balance those?
Well, I think we try to select for those who are always going to start with story. The motto for the festival is issues don't move people, stories do. And it doesn't always have to be a narrative. It can also be a character. And as the other Peter was pointing out, the landscape itself can actually be that character. It doesn't just have to be a human character. But I think we always want to start with films that aren't just earnest, that aren't just about an issue, but that start with having a strong character or a strong story. Because if you start to care about a person or you start to care about the arc of a story, you then naturally get caught up in the message that's being presented.
So you gave us a taste of some of the documentaries, and Peter Gallison talked about his. Now let's turn to the non-documentaries, the stories, the fictional stories. What are a couple that are highlighted here at the festival?
Well, one of the ones we're really excited about won the Best Animated Feature Award at a recent animated film festival is a film from Brazil called Rio 2096, A Story of Love and Fury. And it's an epic film told over 500 years of Brazil's past and an imagined 100 years of Brazil's future. And it imagines this indigenous character who is the chosen one, who is going to be reborn over several generations, trying to fight against the negative influences of the European colonization on the local environment. And it so goes through many key eras in Brazil's past, including a peasant revolt against the military dictatorship in the 1960s. And then it imagines that out into the future and imagines that the future arguments in 2096 are going to be over access to environmental resources like water.
And this isn't, I think I saw somewhere, this is not viewed as a meat market for distributors to meet filmmakers and make those deals that might happen at Sundance or something like that.
This is a chance, a community meat market, in the sense that we're not trying to sell the film, but we really think this is a valuable opportunity for filmmakers like Peter to come and meet with academics, although Peter is also an academic, who work on these issues here at UW, and also meet with community groups here in Madison and in Dane County and all of Wisconsin, who we've tried to bring together and say this is a chance for filmmakers to talk with people working in the field and people working in the academy on these issues and coming together around stories and using stories as the way to catalyze new conversations.
One thing I don't think we've really mentioned yet is climate change and global warming, a fairly big issue for the Nelson Institute, I gather. Are there films that tackle that in this year's festival?
There are. There's, actually it's a pairing of one fiction film and one documentary film. The fiction film is called Promised Land and imagines that in the future, climate change refugees, which is our problem now, will actually be refugees through time, and that people will come backwards from an even worse environmental future into our horrible environmental present, and that bounty hunters will be assigned to try to track down these refugees and prevent them from coming into our time period. And that's paired with a documentary called The Weather War, by two Swedish artists who are interested in the fact that people throughout history have tried to control the weather, and what does that mean for us in this era of climate change?
Peter Gallison, what is the state, do you think, of environmental filmmaking now? Do you have thoughts on things you're excited about, trends, other works that interest you?
Well, I'd say in general, what interests me are films, quite consistent with the philosophy of this festival, that are not hectoring, that are not telling people what to think, but inviting them in to a space and a conversation and a story, new forms of visualization. How do you imagine the land or the future of weather or the future of the climate? And I, you know, personally, I think this is absolutely true for Rob Moss as it is for me. Our goal in making films, our last was a film called Secrecy, about national security, secrecy, and democracy. And we want to help launch a national conversation about things that can too easily be pushed aside, and not to berate people or make fun of people for not thinking what we think they should think, and instead representing people, whether anyone that appears in a film that we do should recognize their position as being what they believe and what they're trying to say. And even if they disagree quite violently with other people in the film, it shouldn't be the case that people feel themselves to be parodied or in some way mocked for the views that they hold. So I think environmental documentaries, like other documentaries, really need to, in addition to being able to tell stories and to be visually engaging, they need to also invite people in and have a certain respect for an audience.
So start conversations rather than, I guess, finish them.
Yes.
So, Peter Boger, does that fit in with a lot of the films you've got, or the mission of the festival in general, too, I guess?
Absolutely. I know one of our films that's considered by some groups to be controversial is this film called Pandora's Promise, made by UW alum Robert Stone. And it's a film that looks at environmentalists who used to be firmly anti-nuclear power, who've decided that nuclear power is actually potentially part of the solution when we're in this era of climate change and the alternative is carbon-based fuels. And we've had all sorts of people say, how dare you show this film? Isn't this propaganda? And we said, no. If we only show films that we agree with or that everybody who's, quote unquote, an environmentalist agrees with, then we're not having a conversation. And so how do we start the dialogue? How do we bring people in who wouldn't think of themselves as I'm an environmentalist and get them at an environmental film festival?
One of the things that strikes me about documentary these days is it is a common space for us. It's a kind of a shared experience that we can have. Of course, people, you can stream films and see them individually, but we still have in our culture the sense of getting together in a theater and having a conversation get launched by films. Whereas, you know, a generation ago, that might have been one of the more influential television programs or the standard newspapers that are our newspapers of record. Documentary film has become a place where people can go to as a common reference point in their conversation.
Peter Boger, is there a space for conversation at the festival? Do people get together and talk about these things they just saw?
Absolutely. One of our big goals with bringing in filmmakers is to have spaces after as many films as possible to have dialogues with the filmmakers. We also have panels after several of our films where we really try to bring in experts, not just from the university, but from the community, and make this a living film festival, knowing and hoping that the conversations will continue when people leave the theater, when they're in the lobby, and hopefully when they get home.
All right, a last question for each of you. Peter Gallison, as you wrap up Containment, do you have a next project in mind or a dream project that you'd like to do?
Well, it's hard to say. Right now, what we'll be showing is a rough cut. It's nearly finished, but not quite. And it's I can't imagine a more furiously busy time than for a filmmaker to be in these last weeks of making a film. So I can't even imagine my future 6 months from now, let alone 100,000 years from now.
And Peter Boger, anything you're particularly excited about this festival that I didn't give you a chance to talk about yet?
Well, the one thing I would say is in a festival that's about futures, there also needs to be a question of hope and faith for the future. And so we were looking for a film that would have that. And for me, the film is Trash Dance, which we're showing as one of our two closing night films. And it's all about finding hope by finding people coming together as a community, which I think is the perfect embodiment of our festival.
All right. Peter Boger, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Peter Gallison, thank you as well.
Thank you.
That's Peter Boger. He's programmer for the Tales from Planet Earth Film Festival at the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, and Peter Gallison, co-director of the film Containment.